Hello and welcome to the Parent Guide to GCSE, Parent Guide to Education podcast. Today we have the magnificent Kate Moyusa, who is a wellbeing and lifestyle coach who specifically focuses on ADHD, mainly in women. This was originally recorded as a live Facebook event, but due to the ever-increasing prevalence of the condition, not to mention Emily being diagnosed herself, we're now releasing it as a podcast. So without further ado, over to Kate.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm not sure expert. I'm definitely getting to that point where I'm learning a lot more about it. So I'm a health and wellbeing coach, specific sort of lifestyle coach with a specific interest in ADHD. And the reason I have this interest is because I grew up with two brothers with ADHD. Well, I'd say mid-80s, and that's when I heard the words ADHD in my family, and it's never left me. And I got diagnosed at the age of 40 with ADHD, and my daughter also got diagnosed about 2 weeks after me. And I see it everywhere now. I help a lot of, specifically women, actually, with ADHD. But I help a lot of other people with children with ADHD. I'm sort of like a magnet to it now because my eyes are so open to sort of spotting the warning signs. I've helped those a few of my friends' children. I really see a lot of the pitfalls, especially in the academic system with ADHD. And thankfully, you know, one of the plus sides with the pandemic was that parents were able to see how their children were studying, were learning what was going in, their memory retention, how they were sitting. And this is exactly what happened with my daughter. And I see there's an element going on with my son, who's 15, nearly 16, who's doing his pre-GCSE exams next week. And I see how it manifests differently in different people and all the different angles it comes from and how it can have an impact on their lives, their family lives, their education. So it's not something to be dismissed as a naughty child, you know, syndrome, or, you know, stop feeding them sugar and they'll be fine. It's a lot more deeper rooted than that.
We know a lot of teachers from our careers who have said, yes, it's just a rebranding for naughty kids. That's all it is. And it's a constant sort of, you know, from the probably the older generation of teachers, I'd suggest.
Yes, and that then medication is being used as a cure-all for naughty children who don't want to sit still. And that's obviously, it's obviously much more detailed, much more intricate than that. So. Oh, go on.
I was going to say, can I just ask? So you're obviously diagnosed in your 40s, you're saying. Do you think you've had it all the way through? It's just it was a late diagnosis, or is it late on? Is that a thing?
No, definitely looking back now. So historically, the experts thought, oh, it's boys, because they'd see the hyperactive boys bouncing off the walls, not being able to sit still. And it actually looks very different in girls. So very often the girls mask the symptoms. The girls are internally, their minds are all over the place, but they know from a societal perspective that they need to sit still and be good. Obviously I'm generalizing here because there's girls that aren't like that. But I remember daydreaming a lot. That's a big thing for girls, sitting there and not retaining the information, not understanding the information, but not wanting to make a fuss and put their hand up and ask. And they get, you know, way behind. They don't understand, you know, lots of concepts, especially in maths. You know, if you miss a big concept in maths, then that has a huge impact moving forward. I'm sure you've seen that. You know, spelling, missing like those vital, you know, years of the beginning with the phonics and everything. Girls, it can manifest in anxiety. It can look like they are just, they're fine on the outside, but internally there's, you know, lots of sort of issues going on. So it's a hard one. And people, doctors or specialists, are only just understanding all the different comorbidities that come with ADHD as well. So it's not just that not being able to focus, not being able to sit still. Very often the hyperactivity is not the physical hyperactivity, it's the mental side, which contributes to, you know, anxiety. There's lots of other ways of sort of seeing it. You know, I had to, when my daughter was diagnosed, I had to sit down with her teacher, who was the head of the SEND department at school. She was really knowledgeable. And she said to me, you know, hand on heart, I wouldn't have known to diagnose your daughter, but you presented a list of, you know, things. It corresponded with the fact that she wasn't up to scratch with lots of different things. I knew she wasn't stupid. She'd gone for dyslexia tests. They weren't coming back conclusive. There were so many things that hadn't been, I don't know, it was just inconclusive. And I came back with a checklist for ADHD, and she just, it was like, yeah, it was like so obvious. And that made me look at my childhood, it made me look at my education going through primary school, high school and university, and it was like, wow, it was just, it just opened my eyes to all the things that were missed throughout my academic career, which, you know, and I see this a lot with clients, there's a lot of element of grief there, because you just think, why was it not picked up? You know, if I'd been given the opportunity to learn differently, if I had more support, if I'd been given options, perhaps I would have got those better, you know, qualifications. I would have done better in my exams. So it's, I feel very passionate about getting parents, teachers to just learn, just be a bit more aware and not be too dismissive, because there's always going to be a reason why it's not, the child's not retaining the information, or they're not able to focus, or their motivation isn't there. So yeah, it's a big thing, I think.
I think the biggest frustration from a teacher point of view was that, you know, you do know, I think we all know, when there is always a reason behind it. It's just the lack of any kind of time to investigate, to pick stuff up, because it is just like this steamroller at the moment, particularly at the moment in terms of education. And so in secondary school especially, there isn't that one person that sees them all day like they do at primary school, where you're more likely to pick up on those kinds of things because you're with that same child all day. Whereas in secondary school, because it's just a different teacher after different teacher, and you see your form tutor every day, but that's only for 10, 15 minutes, I think it becomes more difficult for schools to pick that up. So it is something that perhaps parents would be quite interested in, you know, finding out about, things like, what should they be looking for? What are those warning signs? What are those things that, those clues that could lead you in the direction of a correct diagnosis?
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, what the pandemic brought was obviously children being, you know, homeschooled, more so for the primary school, because it was the parents that were sitting with them most of the time. If you're in a sort of a state school, or, and where my older children were in their bedrooms, you know, it was a lot more online, sort of like the video style teaching. And I knew my daughter was fidgety, and I knew that she did find it hard to sit, because I'd see that over, like, she's doing homework. But I just sort of put it down to, oh, you know, she would go off somewhere else, or she would sit properly and eat a dinner, she'd be fidgeting. And I was, you know, you just sort of dismiss her things. But day in, day out, I was telling her to sit down and focus, and she would have so many tantrums. She wouldn't be able to do things. She wouldn't be able to read a comprehension and then be able to decipher all the wording. That would completely overwhelm her. She'd see two pages of words and just be like, I can't do it. Then they'd be crying and screaming, and it would just be a whole morning of huge amounts of emotion from both of us, anger, shouting. It was very, very difficult. And it was to a point where I was kind of like desperate. I was just like, what is going on here? And that's, thankfully I had the ADHD knowledge because of it in my family, because I'd seen my brothers, and I knew what the warning signs were. There was inklings going on with my oldest son, so I was sort of like, the radar was already on a little bit, but I'd never thought about it for girls. It was really quite, you know, what is going on, you know, what is this? I thought girls didn't get ADHD. And then since her diagnosis and my diagnosis, it is, there are so many women out there. And I know this is not about women, but I think just from a societal perspective of how girls are meant to be in school and how girls are meant to study, they're meant to be fastidious and neat and tidy, and they're meant to sit quietly and be focused, all these things that are drilled into us. And when we can't do that, it makes it breeds even less self-worth, and our self-esteem goes. And I noticed that in my daughter. Her self-esteem was rock bottom. She didn't want to put a hand up in class. She didn't want to read in public. That was a big thing for her. Reading aloud. She would never put her hand up and answer any questions. So there's lots of different ways, and it's just flagging up things of if your child is a good child, you know, they haven't got behavioural issues, but they are, you know, struggling with focus and motivation and completing tasks, being able to sit and see the task through without it overwhelming them. Those are warning signs as well. I would just say definitely is be your child advocate, because as you know, as a teacher, especially in the state system, is that you've got a lot of kids, that you've got huge amounts of work to do yourself. And as as brilliant as teachers are, I know that they don't have the time to really focus on every child to see what's going on. So I would use your gut instincts for your own child and follow that through, and don't be dismissed, and really present to your teacher what you've researched. And I did the same with my GP. So my GP again was clueless, and I had to show her, I had to explain to her, go through my family history. And it was like I was being challenged. And I was like, I'm not trying to do this so I can get some Ritalin for my kid here. I'd rather she doesn't go on medication. Do I want to be putting my child on medication? No. But I need my child to be able to fulfill her potential here. And she's not being, her potential's not being fulfilled. And that is what is was the saddest part for me, because I could see that she wanted to learn. She wanted to study. She wants to do well. You know, she doesn't want to be, you know, not, you know, scribbling her homework and, you know, doing it haphazardly. So I would say be your child's, just be that person that can stick up for them and present it to the GP and the teacher with what you found.
So with your daughter then, when she was diagnosed, you said that she ticked a load of boxes. It was clear what the problem was. What happened at school? With the diagnosis, what then happens?
So this is pretty profound, I have to say. So she got diagnosed, I think, about 4 weeks before the lockdown ended, the last lockdown. So she, I think that was, they went back to school, was it April? I don't know, the months merge in March, April. I think it was the end of March, wasn't it? So she got diagnosed, actually, thankfully, quite quickly. We were in a fortunate position that we could pay to get her privately diagnosed. And that is a big thing, because through the state and the councils, it's a huge backlog. So I'm waiting to do it through that way as well. So she's, you know, through the pathway. So it's all done properly. She's year five. I want her to be on that pathway. So when she goes to, high school, it's all done. We're still waiting to be seen. And that was 2 or 3 months, that's still 3 months later. Privately, we got an appointment very quickly, diagnosed very quickly, and thankfully, and the doctor was really well experienced in this. We were lucky to know someone, so it kind of worked in our favor. And straight away, we tried her on the dosage of medication that she recommended, and on the whole, it's worked really well. There was, you know, she had to adjust to it. But straight away, honestly, even within the first day, I was like, oh my God, she sat and did a whole comprehension on her own. Beautiful, long answers, thoughtful answers, really used words, articulate, all of it. It came from her, and it was like it was being blocked before. And it was actually very emotional as a parent, both of us. And my husband was a bit more hesitant. He was more resistant. He did push back. And I had to say to him, please trust me on this one, really trust me. And he did. And he was a cynic that had seen it with his own eyes. No one else helped her. She did it herself. Then she was doing it. We were homeschooling her. My life was so much easier because she was sitting and working. She'd go off on her own and work and come down an hour later with, you know, her work done, completed. Finished, no drama, no crying, no emotion. I would say it was life-changing for us. Then she went to school, And the teacher straight away, you could see, straight away from, you know, before lockdown, after lockdown, we had a parents' evening about 3 weeks ago. She's gone up, you know, she's one of the highest in maths. She's fulfilling herself completely and she's proud of herself, her self-esteem. She is, I would say she's got self-belief now. She puts her hand up, she's got confidence, she's reading. Like the teacher said to me the other day, she can't stop her from putting her hand up the whole time. Just one sec. Now I've got a child underneath on the floor. So sit there quietly. So yes, it was, I have to say, very profound, the change. And listen, I'm not saying that the medication's perfect. It's not. There's small issues, but the benefits were 100% override the negatives. Who knows what's ahead in the future? Who knows? You know, I'm sure as she gets bigger, you have to tweak the medication. Hormones play a massive part in ADHD. So that's something, again, if you've got a child who's sort of 13, 12, 13, 14, and they're just being diagnosed, it's a different kettle of fish because hormones exacerbate some of the symptoms. But yeah, I mean, I work a lot with sort of like the holistic side. So if you don't want to medicate your child, and that's a completely personal, I'm not medicated, but I have changed my lifestyle holistically, diet, exercise, all the stuff, the way I manage my life is completely different. And that has been pivotal for me as well.
I think I've always said, and this for me was more about antidepressants. I had depression, I used antidepressants, I got back to the point where I didn't need them anymore, and that was fab. But there's a stigma around medication, certain medications, things like Ritalin and antidepressants. And if you look at it as being, because it's a mental illness, we think of it differently than a physical illness. And so we don't look at it like being, for example, diabetic and taking insulin to manage your blood sugar. It's the exact same thing. You're managing what's going on in your body. And if you can do that, why wouldn't you? Whether you do that holistically, again, you know, you can manage your diabetes with diet and so on and so on. It's just, it's your choice as to what you do. But there shouldn't be this stigma around particularly Ritalin, which got a very bad name for very many reasons, I think.
Stigma behind it for 20, 30 years, especially in America, you know, you hear about, you know, every other child being on Ritalin. But I mean, if I could look back in my education, I wish I had that medication, because I know that I wasn't fulfilling my potential throughout my academic career. Maturity helps, hindsight, perspective, all of that helps, and being an adult, being able to make, you know, conscious choices. But if you're a child that doesn't understand the way your brain works, like, and you know, why should you? Then you should, you know, the way I likened it was literally like she put on a pair of glasses. She was trying to study before without her glasses on, and now she's studying, everything was clearer, there was clarity, there was better perspective. And that's how simple it was. I know a friend of mine who's had very similar experience. It's just night and day. And I know it's a personal thing, but if you're holding back out of fear, and I did hold back for a while, I was terrified because I didn't want to put her on something that I didn't understand. Once I'd done the research, I really looked into, I spoke to other parents who had put their children on medication. Once I realized, actually, it's a balance. We're balancing out a deficiency in the chemicals, in neurobiology. It's just replacing what should be there anyway. That was a game changer for me. And once I removed my own fears, and I stopped putting myself in her way, I think I was restricting her. And then I started thinking, well, you know, when she's older, is she going to resent me for not making this decision for her? Again, who knows what's ahead in the future, but I know that right now it's working for her, and I'm very grateful for the medication.
Parenting's tough. It really is. Knowing what's right and being responsible for those decisions is is scary.
Now, this is no use for anyone listening to the podcast, but anyone listening live, if you do want to put any questions in the comments, please fire them across. We, I'm sure Kate will be delighted to answer any questions you do have. One thing I was going to ask was, when it comes to diagnosis, we know about the CAMHS issue and funding is more or less impossible. It's probably 6 to 8 months wait, probably something like that. Yeah. Is your advice to go straight to a GP then and see, or would a GP then refer them to CAMHS? How does it work?
So I went straight to the GP. I think I went privately straight away because I did know the doctor personally, and I knew, and I had conversations with her before about what she's working on. I know that she had a son that was diagnosed with ADHD. She's a pediatrician. And she'd seen, so it was a very personal thing for her. That's when she sort of flipped her practice to really sort of help ADHD children. So I went to her. Then she said, I've got to go to the GP. So then I went to the GP, but I was very forceful with the GP. I said, you're not going to convince me otherwise. I'm just telling you, this is the situation and I really need you on board. Yeah. She recognised she was a parent herself with children similar ages, so she could see that, you know, there was a bit of a desperation here, that we needed some, you know, intervention, we needed help. Then we went to the teacher, who thankfully again was head of SEN. She was knowledgeable, even though I, you know, not that knowledgeable for girls. So I did use a little bit of my force here, of really kind of, you know, knowing that I needed to get to a certain place. And I'm sad to get, you know, but I just think the system is so behind, you know, the training is behind. I work with a consortium of lots of ADHD therapists and experts and counsellors, and they're all saying the same thing, that the knowledge is behind, you know. The experts are there, but it's few and far between. And it should be filtered out, you know, in teacher training. They should be the warning signs. It should be there. It's like a big element, because no teacher wants a disruptive child in their class. You know, children deserve to be taught with in a calm environment. And so I think it comes from a lot, but parents also need to understand and recognise. And so there's, I think it's getting better. I really do. I also think diagnosis of ADHD is growing hugely. Whether that is, I don't know where that's coming from. Maybe food and diet. There's lots of different things, you know, reasons why I possibly think ADHD is, you know, being diagnosed more. But I just feel that medication is not the only route. You know, you can go differently. And I see, you know, people with children who don't do any exercise. They're eating food that's, you know, they shouldn't be eating. They aren't being they're not getting downtime. They're not being taught how to breathe and meditation and all these different ways to calm their minds and their bodies. That is just so helpful for the life, you know, moving forward. It should just be part of the education system of teaching children to kind of just calm down. And I do that with tapping. So I use a lot of EFT, which I don't know if you're aware of, you know what that is. But that is, it's really, really helpful for children. And I use, do you want me to explain what EFT is?
Oh, no, sorry, it's just we're just losing you for a second.
Froze for a second. So yeah, if you could explain about EFT, that'd be great.
Oh, right, sorry. It's called emotional freedom technique, and what it is, it's I would say it's like an energy-based psychology type way of working, where you're tapping on meridian points around your face. So I'm just tapping on these points here, and they're acupressure points. So they're identified as specific acupressure points, which can calm the nervous system. They're calming the amygdala, which is that sort of fight or flight part of our brain. And it helps us just calm and relax. And so it's very good for anxiety, for nerves, brilliant for helping children who are nervous about exams, worried about school, very good at helping minimize small things that have become a big deal. So it's a way of tapping in literally to our body. So it's a somatic type of therapy. So it's almost, if meditation doesn't work for you, but you feel like you need a way of calming your brain, we're tapping on these points and we're talking about, and we're really bringing forward what's on our mind, what we're worried about, whether it's revision, our memory, not being able to retain information, whether it's something really small like being able to write pages and pages. We get to the root of the problem while we're tapping on these pressure points, which are known to reduce this stress in our body. So it's highly effective, highly, highly effective. And I use this, and it really works very well with ADHD. I've written an article in Attitude magazine, and I'll send you the link. Attitude magazine is a global magazine for ADHD. It's highly regarded, with every expert in ADHD writing for it. And I was so proud to get this article in there because they recognize that, you know, our well-being and really looking after ourselves from a sort of our mind and our brain and our body is just as important as, you know, being organized and focused or taking the medication. It's there's lots of different elements of ways that we can, you know, another visitor. There's lots of different ways we can come at this. And I do believe that the tapping genuinely helps. I've seen it in my children. I've seen it in other children and lots of adults who were cynical as well. So, yeah, it's a great tool.
Yeah, there's a lot of cynicism around those kinds of things. I mean, if you ask a lot of people, meditation and mindfulness is all woo-woo nonsense, but meditation has helped keep me sane the last few years. It genuinely makes a difference to my stress levels, to everything. And it's something that I hadn't even really thought about before and can make a big difference with kids as well. Our daughter was quite anxious early on in the pandemic because Paul was vulnerable. So she was a bit like, oh, I'm going to school and I'm a bit worried about what I'm bringing home. And she started using some meditation app kind of stuff to do some guided meditations. And it was really helping. It's worth trying to get that stuff out there a little bit more so that people are aware that it's not just, you know, people sitting in their Lululemons and going, it's an actual technique that can make a really big difference.
Good impression.
Thank you. I thought so. We apologize. Yeah. That's the cameo there from our son, who clearly, as a teenager, doesn't like to listen when we warn him we're doing a podcast.
No doubt he's absolutely mortified, but that serves him right.
Oh dear. So so yes, now I had a question and it is temporarily gone, because I was distracted by the cameo.
Well, I've got a question here about diet. Is diet a huge issue in terms of if you can't get hold of the Ritalin because the GP, the referrer, whatever, is not working?
Or you don't want to.
How can diet help? And what are the go-to kind of foods?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of huge amounts of evidence especially for emotional regulation. That in ADHD a lot, that our emotions are like a roller coaster, up and down, and we can lose our temper very quickly. We can you can cry and then 5 minutes later we'll be okay. So there's evidence out there that omega-3s, which is great for the brains, we want to be protecting our brain, we want to be boosting that. So lots of fish, lots of oily fish, great olive oil, olives. We want to be, you know, listen, it's common sense, you know. Fizzy drinks, preservatives, fast food is, you know, it's not good for our bodies. It's even worse for our brain. So when my children are eating rubbish, and they do eat rubbish, and I try really hard for them not to, but I haven't got that amount of control over them. I don't even talk about weight. I don't talk about body. I just talk about our brain. And I see it and I say to them, have you noticed that you just had that Sprite or Fanta and you've had that chocolate bar and now look at your mood? So I try and make that direct correlation between look, you've just got really angry and really aggressive with me. And what have you just had to eat or drink? Or what aren't you eating and drinking? Are you not drinking enough water? Are you forgetting to eat lunch? Are you not having enough protein? So these are lots of things, again, that if we can equip our kids, you know, I say to my kid, my little ones all the time, are you drinking enough water in school? And I give them the most kind of simple example of your brain being like a sponge. If you're not drinking enough water, you've got a crispy, dry sponge. And if you drink lots of water, you've got a lovely, soft, absorbent, you know, sponge, and you're absorbing all that information. And I just want it to be as simple as that for them, that, you know, water, eating really a really good lunch, making sure you're having, you know, lots of berries and fruit, green vegetables. I know full well with children, we can't, they're not going to be on a Gwyneth Paltrow type diet. But if we can just try and bolster them with that, that food and that knowledge, I would say more than knowledge, empower them to make choices, because now I've got a 13 and a 15 year old, they're often out with their friends. And I know that they're heading to the local Tesco's and buying the fizzy drinks and the chocolate I probably don't let them have. But if I can at least empower them that one day when they're older, they'll be like, actually, mum was right. She nagged me, but now I know she's right. So it's just making conscious choices. And if you can make those conscious choices and lead by example, and if you're going to be having a Domino's and a McDonald's for dinner every other night, try and remember what you are, you know, doing for your kids. And it 100%, I feel so strongly that our brain, our mood, our focus, our concentration has a massive, it's directly correlated to what we put in our bodies. So even if it's, you can't do anything about your food, cut out the sugary drinks and just drink water. Or if you, or just add a few more fruits and vegetables to your diet, just whatever you can do in a small step that will just significantly change what you're, I guess, what you're doing sort of week by week, I think it will have a big impact, definitely.
And it's not just in terms of if you're worried about your child having ADHD, it's a skill for life. I quite definitely the other day got hangry because I was too late having my breakfast, my blood sugar went too low, and I was just in the worst mood. So I knew that, I registered it. I was like, just leave me be for a bit. I'm going to go and have something to eat. And then come and talk to me about half an hour when it's kicked in and it'll all be okay again. But it is directly linked to that. And we've both been making much more of an effort to drink more water during the day. And it's making a difference already. As you said, I love the analogy of the crispy sponge. I'm totally stealing it. it really does make a difference.
And I think if we can just give our kids those little tidbits of knowledge that will just stay in their heads, and just, you know, things like, I know obviously there's lots of nut allergies, but I give my kids lots of nuts, and if they come home from school and they straight away want a snack on the crisps, I'll say to them, right, just have a peanut butter sandwich, because I know they've got the protein, I know that it's better than them having like three chocolate bars, and then you say, okay, if you want the packet of crisps, have the packet of crisps. But it's those little things. And the hunger and the blood sugar levels, again, you know, if you've got ADHD, that throws it off, you know, off the Richter scale. You can't, the judgment's completely impaired. It just throws, you know, an argument can happen in the drop of a hat if you've got a child with hunger and ADHD. I mean, trust me, I know, because I've seen it. It's explosive and it's hard work. And it's really, and being a parent of a child with ADHD is hard work. But there are little ways to just manage the situation and kind of de-escalate what could be a big explosion into a small mini explosion.
Always better.
Absolutely.
Oh, right.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I think mindful of the time. So
jam-packed lots of useful information in there, and what we'll do is we'll pop in the comments on the Facebook Live, and then in the show notes on the podcast, places where people could perhaps find you to find out more. And if there's any kind of questions, I'm sure if you ping them in, we can always pass them along. So massive thank you for your time this evening. That's been really helpful. And wow. I feel like I understand a lot more now.
Oh, well, I just wanted to say that with the EFT and the tapping that I mentioned before, I have got quite a lot of videos on, I've got a Vimeo account. So ones that you can use for children as well. So if you have a child that is prone to anxiety, if exams are bringing more of their sort of anxious side, then the tapping is really helpful. And I know it sounds a bit odd and weird, but if you want to watch a couple of the videos, then you kind of understand what it does. And if they can just do it for 3 minutes before an exam or before they start revising, and if it's procrastination, that's a huge thing. It really is, I would say, I don't want to put too much onus on it, but it really is one of those things that is just great for them to have in their tool bag. Like I think I've got a workshop on there as well that I can teach. I teach parents to teach their children about the tapping. So lots of stuff on there. So I just wanted to be able to offer those resources because sometimes when we're at our wit's end as a parent, to know that we've got options to pull out, you know, you kind of think, what do I do? And then I forget that I'm a tapping, you know, practitioner, and I do it with my kids before bed. So yeah, I'll make sure you have all those links, and then at least you've got them for your listeners.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Right. And have a lovely evening.
To everyone else.
Lovely watches. And
we'll see you again soon.
See you again soon, yeah.
Thank you very much to Kate. And as always, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave some feedback for the episode. And remember to subscribe so you get notified when the next episode is released.